From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 784, Encryption, Compression, and Sharing in Server 2022 with guest Ned Pyle. Recorded Monday, June 14th, 2021. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my favorites today, Ned Pyle, who is a principal program manager in the Microsoft Windows Server Cloud and Enterprise Engineering Group, and he manages replication and remote file protocols like Storage Replica, SMB, DFSR, and of course, Scale-Up File Server. Welcome back, friend. You are my SMB god.
Well, I'm a jealous god.
It's true.
I don't like pretenders.
I referenced your SMB one shame page just the other day to a group of IT folks.
Oh,
it's good. Still being updated, still, you know, like more people are stepping off that list bit by bit.
Yeah, I occasionally still have to add like a, oh no, but for the most part over the last year, I've really just been updating it with,
oh man,
this vendor got their act together and you don't need to worry about them anymore. So that's been really good.
But are you just quietly implying there that there are still vendors out there shipping new product using SMB1?
Yeah.
Dang.
Like there's some, you know, ancillary stuff. I don't think I've seen anybody like majorly step on it lately where they just ship something new. Like I've watched even towards the end of the big campaign, I watched some big vendors, gigantic vendors, create brand new SMB1 stuff right around then and then just get pilloried online because by then everybody knew about the campaign. And then just quickly change gears. But I still see some really big name vendors out there who are still requiring it, even in their latest products. And, you know, obviously they're probably still working towards the goal, but, you know, it's not always going to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, my telemetry is great. I mean, I'm really happy with my Windows 10 telemetry. I'm down into the 1-2% range.
Dude, that's great.
When I see SMB connections being SMB1 anymore, that's a broad spectrum answer across like consumers and enterprises and stuff. Mm-hmm. In the enterprise space, it's less than 1%. So I started off that project in the 40% range 7 years
that's
ago.
That's a win, man. Yeah. I mean, that's...
Yeah, so it's a big win. And it's not the kind of win you get to like really be excited about because you're mostly just, you know...
Fundamentally, you're taking out the trash.
Stop a mistake, right?
Yeah. It is just cleaning up. But
I mean, it really
is
like I really do feel pretty proud of that we've come this far as a bunch of unorganized, unrelated companies that really weren't doing this except as a do what's right campaign. There was no consortium. There was no like, you know, thou shalt.
Yeah.
It just was just hard work and everybody just admitting they needed to update their stuff.
Well, and it's not like there was an alternative. It's literally getting in, taking code that the sad part of it is code that works, but was not safe. And getting it safe, or at least
that is the key. I actually that SMB1 removal has gone on to form the basis of about a half dozen other old protocol removal projects started here inside Microsoft in the last year or so. Some big names there that we're going to start allowing you to turn off or uninstall, not shipping on by default,
right?
A whole bunch of things like and a bunch of like well abused ancient protocols from the 80s and 90s that will get a similar treatment pretty soon. I'm pretty happy about that. I'm really excited to start talking about it. I can't start naming names and talking about stuff yet, but we were some big moves starting later this year.
But that is an interesting approach for you to ship a new product with a lot of that stuff off by default so that only if it breaks something, then you can go back and turn it on for that particular case. But, you know, to start to default that way, it certainly give people reminders that, listen, like, this is an issue.
Yeah, you got to find, you know, alternatives to these things. Some of them do and some of them don't.
Yeah.
You got to find vendors out there who are, again, you know, using maybe unwittingly old unsafe protocols, oftentimes just because they've you know, their code has just made small iterations over the years, and it just, you know, it's just hiding there in the basement, just like everybody else.
Yeah, sure.
And so it'll be a similar sort of thing, but, you know, you'll start seeing some of that stuff. Maybe even towards the end of this year, start seeing some of those campaigns coming out, and I'll certainly talk about them on Twitter and we'll blog and stuff.
I appreciate that. And, you know, the security situation is serious. Like, the rate of ransomware attack, the amount of stuff going on, and so much of this, there's a lot of, you need to be patched. Don't make it easy for them.
Yeah. I've got, not related to SMB. I work on lots of other stuff besides SMB.
And yeah, I gave the list.
Ransomware is top of mind. Yeah, ransomware is top of mind for me right now about some things we can do in the future about making that really easy to not be in the situation where you are either rebuilding from scratch or, you know, with the worst possible answer, actually paying a ransom, which is the worst possible thing you could do, obviously.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Or, you know, some of that stuff. So there's a lot of things being thought about right now in the world of Windows around that space.
I'm excited to be able to talk about that too, as more of this comes along. We need to arm our folks even more. I mean, there's great tools today, but it's got to be easier.
Yeah.
So it's not just SMB. You know, you're involved in anything about moving files around. Anything new and exciting you can talk about?
I have a lot of interesting things to talk about right now. You know, sort of, you know, what the world looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, what we've started kicking out. So obviously Windows Server 22, Server 2022 went into preview in the beginning of June, the end of May. I think the end of May. It's sort of harder to remember. Things
right.
are going really hard right now. And that particular edition is the first time that I've done a bunch of new SMB stuff in a few years that hit that at that milestone that is available to anybody who wants to start tinkering around with 22, which you can get from, it's in the Azure Gallery. I believe it's up on the Eval Center. And then if you grab Windows Insider, just grab today's build, whatever today is. And that will get you if you want to do, you know, client server SMB stuff, you can grab two copies of server and do them to each other if mm-hmm. you want to cheat. But if you want to grab the client, it's also plumbed with all this new stuff, and Insider, it hasn't quite gotten to the regular production Windows client yet.
Okay.
But we added a bunch of cool new stuff. So just for anybody who wants to do it, we added some security features. So we added AES 256 support for the really like super paranoid. We've had AES 128 encryption for many years in SMB, and it's in no danger of being defeated. But if you are listening to this right now with aluminum foil on your head, AES 256 will get you a significant advantage, you know, when someday when quantum computing becomes a cannon, they're going to point at your laptop, I guess.
Yeah. That's so much further away than you think.
It's so much further. It's actually more of a regulatory requirement. Like, you know, to do business with a lot of government bodies now, they're really starting to say you've got to future-proof yourself with AES 256. And so we did that.
Okay, yeah.
But it gave me a great opportunity to go back and revisit some problems with encryption and signing that I wasn't being allowed to work on just from a resourcing perspective, like a headcount perspective. And so one thing we did was we added the proper acceleration, chip-based and so acceleration of GCM, the suite that does the, you know, the Cypher suite that handles doing encryption and signing for signing. So in the past, we used a thing called CMAC, and then for encryption, we used a thing called GMAC.
Right.
And we end up with a paradox where encryption was faster than signing. Like, you get better throughput doing encryption than signing, which is
wow.
the opposite of what anybody would think.
Yeah.
So nobody would ever even really stop to think, should I do signing or encryption based on my performance needs? They would always do signing if they had a performance need.
Right.
Just to stop, man, you know, stop intercepting attacks, stop tampering.
Yeah.
Right. And they would just assume it's going to be faster because, of course, historically and everywhere in the universe, it's faster. It's less math.
Right.
And, you know, fewer operations. But so we finally got around to accelerating signing. So it's back to being faster than encryption. So that's a good
thing. Yeah. So this has got more to do with how slow your signing code was, not how fast your encryption code was.
Exactly. And we did some other optimizations just to make it better in general. So now the performance will, really whip. And we got around to the scenario of RDMA encryption. In the past, we allowed you to encrypt, TCP stuff, and that would just work. And then if you tried to do RDMA instead of TCP, it's like you're doing SMB direct and you're using it for storage replica mm-hmm. or storage spaces direct or Hyper-V live migration or any one of those things. If you said encrypt, we'd be like, cool, we're going to do that. But because this is all direct memory access, we're going to turn off direct memory access so nobody can see the shared memory of encryption, which would kind of defeat it.
Right.
And so your performance would tank. And I mean tank, worse than TCP.
Interesting. Because didn't we have like dedicated RDMA NICs? Like that was supposed to be hardware accelerated?
Yeah. Yeah. Even with that, it would turn off the RDMA part that was called direct data placement would be right. turned off. And so what we did to get around this in a proper way, if you want to create like a really secure, storage replica, async replication, or if you want to do like from east west in a cluster, I want encrypted or signed. You know, east-west communications, I don't trust the cluster network itself. Right. Like I want to
be able to sync elsewhere.
Right. Then we do this encryption stuff before we get anywhere near RDMA.
Right.
And then that way, whatever goes into RDMA is just, you know, unreadable goo for anybody. Even if you could all see it because it's all in the same shared memory area, but you couldn't do anything about it.
Right.
So that's how we got around it. And the performance now is, it will drop, you know, like say 10 or 15%, but it's not 120%.
Yeah, it's not devastating.
Not like, yeah, it's not annihilating your performance and you'll want to be able to use it. If that's your threat model.
Now, if I want,
which I still
sort of, I can add these. So, you know, if I'm working with like 2019 in the field or against Azure, like, is this just drivers I would install and I would get that improved performance?
Yeah. All that kind of stuff is if you're doing it in 22, it just happens.
Right.
It's just going to be part of the negotiation.
Yeah.
And if you were to try and mix together 2019, right now you would go back to having
the low
crap.
Right.
Yeah.
So is there going to be an option for 2019 here? Or is this just 2022 stuff?
I think that we will, we would seriously discuss backporting that okay. if a big enough customer brought it up and yeah. then everybody would back from it. It's a question of like, do any people really care about encryption? I still, going back to my telemetry, you know, for all of the good talk about SMB1 removal and more security focus. I still see really, honestly, very little use of SMB encryption by customers. So
yeah,
it's a question of do they really want to start, you know, getting serious about not trusting their own networks.
Yeah. Because
a lot of customers right now still tend to just trust inside the walled garden.
Yeah, it's perimeter. They're still doing perimeter security. And we're seeing how that's being taken advantage of. I punch your perimeter and I get all the things. So
yeah.
But getting into this mindset of, no, even between my own servers, stuff's encrypted and sitting in encrypted at rest
right.
so that they can steal this, but they don't have the keys because you locked up the keys, right? Didn't you? You didn't leave them in a folder in a root directory, did you? You didn't do that, did you? No, you wouldn't do that. Not that I'm bitter, but yeah.
I was reading about some particular tools that are good for just for trying to guess password, dictionary brute force stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was just trying to get up, just trying to like refresh my memory and my knowledge of the current state of affairs for a project around security.
Yeah.
And a lot of them now offered like the flag to say, look for files called password.
Yes.
.txt and stuff as they were running around, just, you know, extra value in your hacking tools.
Extra signatures. Well, I love, and I was just going through a case study where they broke the perimeter and then used their own servers to break their at-rest encryption. And the ultimate goal was they found a file that was encrypted and a file that wasn't encrypted, that was the same file, and that's all you need. If you've got both versions of the file and you're using their own compute to crack their encryption,
people are pretty ingenious.
Yeah, the bad guys are working on some of them are. I mean, there's plenty of script kiddies out there today, but a few of these folks are pretty clever about how they beat these things down.
That has always been my sort of take that there's a small, often nationally affiliated, you know, core group of smart folks are doing the real innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, some particular red and blue tool manufacturers. And then just a vast army of people who are themselves sort of like scripts.
Yeah.
You know, that you point some tools at some customer.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of things, right? Not everybody can invent everything.
No. And you anyway. Don't, yeah, true enough. So I appreciate better encryption algorithms internally.
The big one, that's all the security stuff is I get out of the way quick because everybody's already like eyes are glazing over.
Yeah.
But the cool one is SMB compression.
Interesting.
So this feature is now available for sort of a general use case where you say, as an administrator, I want my users to be able to copy without zipping, but instead just copy files that basically, you know, compress or zip on the wire as they're being copied. So rather than dealing with, you know, should I make all my users shrink their files in order to cut down on copy times or to reduce bandwidth, or should I myself have to do that? I mean, administrators probably are the biggest purveyors of great big files themselves,
right.
You know, copying VMs and copying databases and copying gigantic folders full of like geographic mapping files and stuff. You know, the end users probably don't push that much, you know, total data, but they individually work on big files all the time and stuff. And so there's an advantage here if we could go through and make it so that those files don't consume bandwidth and don't consume CPU time and don't consume the ultimate thing, which is the end user's time, which is the, you know, the key to a business or an organization is productivity, right?
Right.
And the user, like that's their mark of you're paying them to do their job. And then if you make their job really slow, you're paying them to sit there and not do their job. The whole goal of SMB compression is not to, you know, not to erase people from the matrix. It's just supposed to, it's supposed to make it so that you are spending less time waiting. And so and initially when we did this, the idea was to make it available just as an application feature. So something like Hyper-V Live Migration can use it, right?
Right.
Copying great big files and they will compress significantly. They have a lot of white space. And I'll tell you right now, a VHD or a VMDK or any one of those files that you copy around from server to server, those are often packed with white space,
yeah.
Endless unused areas.
Incredibly compressible. Disks.
Very compressible. So, but if I start off with a scenario like that, or if I start off where it's like, yes, you now have an option in RoboCopy to do slash compress. I mean, like, who's using RoboCopy besides, I mean, maybe, I don't remember, I'm not sure if 1% of admins are using RoboCopy,
yeah.
Right? Everybody's opening stuff in Explorer,
yep.
Or going to their map drive or doing any one of those things. So as we evolve this along, what you can do right now is you have really three ways. You can RoboCopy it, you know, Xcopy it with mm-hmm. with a command line argument that probably nobody will really do. But you can also now specify when I map a drive, anything I copy over that map drive, we will try to compress.
Right.
And to make it even more hands-free, because map drives, again, are like you might get those from a login script or you as an administrator would do them, but no normal person's going to sit there and map drives.
No.
We also made it so that the share itself can be tagged and say, I'm a compressed SMB share. So whenever people copy data to or from me, we're going to try to compress.
Nice.
And that's the real money winner, because now you have, if I as an end user go to Explorer, if I go to the command line, if I go to an application, no matter where I go, compression will just work. I don't need to teach my users, like, don't forget to click the little checkbox
yeah.
that says compression, because I'm never going to do that crap. And then you just start seeing these incredible savings. So as a demo I do that I usually throw around is I take a 20 gig file, pretty small by big file standards,
sure.
20 gig VHD, and I drop 500 meg of pictures of my dogs into it. So that's, they're all JPEGs, right? They
yeah.
all, they won't compress, and they, I drop them in there and then I copy that file just normally. And it takes on a 1 gigabit network where my storage is not a problem. My storage is pretty fast, flash mm-hmm. storage. It takes about 3 minutes and that's, the network is saturated. I'm getting like the best possible speed I can, and it's going as fast as 1 gigabit will go. Then I do the exact same thing with the compression flag and it's 24 seconds.
Wow.
And my network is empty.
Yeah.
Like it looks, I'm using a couple megabits of data. So it's a gigantic win. If I just take a Windows VM, like 100 gig fixed disk VM, and I install Windows into it, so it's using, I don't know, 7 or 8, you know, gig, that copy will go from being, you know, 15, you know, minutes down to just like 4 minutes, 5 minutes. You save like a lot of time.
Yeah, no kidding.
And you don't have to do anything. You just go into Windows Admin Center and click a box that says, I like compression.
Use compression, yeah. And Ned, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of the leading projects, called 2 Weeks Ready, helps individuals, families, and communities prepare for disasters using smartphones. HTBox builds and operates this and other applications on behalf of a variety of disaster response organizations, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. Your donations help support the creation of this life-saving software. Thanks. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Ned Pyle. We're talking a bit about these file handling features being added by default to 2022, but hopefully to other versions. I think that's logical. You know, I did a quick search on SMB compression, and sure enough, you know, your blog post from March of 2020 came up first, talking about, you know, exactly that sort of thing that we can use compression. Although this is obviously an earlier version, and you focused on RoboCopy and XCopy and those kinds of tools. So,
we plumbed it deeper now. We had some initial work on this back in the so-called SAC releases, the semi-annual channel releases of Windows Server. But this is the first time it's been in real server and real Windows client. Yeah. So this is the broad release. But
yeah, to me, this is a moneymaker for any network that's struggling in any way or any organization using large files. It's just turn this on and see that load on the network go down in exchange for compute load, obviously, right? Like you are, but generally speaking, CPUs are laying around smoking cigarettes and playing poker. Like they haven't got a lot to do.
That is the best part. I mean, in my demo, I used my test server just to show you how Microsoft, you know, a $1 trillion valued company throws around hardware for Ned.
Yeah.
So I have a server with a 24 cores, and you're like, hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's from 12 years ago.
Holy man.
So it was like the state of the art. 24 cores was the bleeding edge when that server was bought, you know, when your kids weren't ready to go into middle school.
Right.
So I, when I do the demo and stuff, I go through and I honestly show the CPU stuff. And it's, you know, it's using like, I don't know, 25 or 30% of the, I think the 8 cores I'm giving to the VM.
Right.
And I'm like, on your laptop would laugh at this. It's not going to be some load that you're worried about. No. We initially built the feature with a lot of sort of aggressive, like, well, we should check how often that we're trying to compress and sample and back off if we think that we're not really getting good value. We had all this complicated algorithm. And then it just turned out to be a waste of time. So we're going to turn that part off.
Yeah, right.
An update and just let it try to compress. If you say compress, we'll try to compress. And then if you want to mess around and say like, oh, maybe compress, then you can read an article about how to touch people knob.
Right.
Yeah.
But most of the time, like I said, the CPU isn't doing much. The compression will tend to have some benefit. There's just no downside to leaving this on.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. And I'm thinking about an organization that's contemplating 10 gig to the network, to the workstation, and this might well take that away.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that I'll probably see the most questions on is if somebody really does have an incredibly good network connection, you know, 10 gigabit, you've got the whole network to yourself. And with the storage typical speeds,
yeah,
you don't get a whole lot of benefit from compression.
Mm-hmm.
But we went through and did the math on how many people were probably using it with at best 1 gigabit from the laptop. And more likely these days, way less than that from a Wi-Fi connection.
Yes. Yeah, you're very right.
You know, we're kind of going backwards on client speeds.
Well, you think about this post-pandemic land where everybody's working for a laptop. It's hot desking. Like they're only coming in once or twice a week. Nobody's plugging a cable into anything anymore. And, you know, you've got MIMO Wi-Fi and lots of nodes and doing everything you can to give as many antennas to each of those machines as you possibly can. And it still ain't gigabit, dude. Like, the compression's going to make a huge difference.
No, it's going to make a huge difference. And that kind of leads me to something else. If you combine compression to a scenario of wanting to use SMB over the internet, you could have a real sort of advantage on like how your mobile workforce operates. So
yeah.
My other like sort of big announcement in recent time here has been SMB over Quick, which I started talking about. I think I even talked about it with you a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something I first started talking about in 2019 at Ignite. And then 2020 came along and we kept working on it and building it and finished it, but didn't have a platform to put it on because no Windows server was coming out that year.
Right.
And so I had this thing done for a long time. And everybody is like, hey, you, where is this? Where is this? We're having a pandemic where all our users are at home and they want to be able to get to their files. And so that's the point of SMB over Quick is to say, what if we were to take TCP away, not permanently, but like give you an option to use something besides TCP on your laptop and instead use the Quick protocol. And that protocol, which is UDP based and goes over port 443 and is always encrypted, mm-hmm. cannot be unencrypted, is always TLS 1.3 and AES 128 or 256 encrypted. Use that as a way to sort of build you a VPN tunnel on the fly, as it were. So you don't have to do a real VPN. If you just want to be able to get to some files quickly as a mobile user, as a home user, as a telecommuter, or just if you want to be like a paranoid Android inside your own network and say like, this is even more secure for me than encryption of SMB because I'll be using certificate-based connectivity to get to Quick long before I do a single thing with a user password.
Interesting.
Which happens still on SMB and happens inside that tunnel. So, you know, if you've got NTLM still and a need to use it, there will no longer be a spot where SMB has any NTLM on the wire at all. It'll just be inside of Quick the whole time. It'll never be exposed, ever.
Now, they're still using TCP for other communications, but when it came to moving files around related to the company, we've got a double-ended TLS 1.3 connection here using a different protocol. It's more efficient for moving files.
Yeah, so the cool thing about this protocol is that it actually, you know, on TCP SMB, which has been around, you know, for a long, long, long
sure.
time, doesn't work over the internet, generally speaking.
Yeah.
It's not typically routed. So even if you were worried about the safety of it and stuff, most customers just can't get through an ISP
yeah.
or even get to their own security department outbound to go do it. And I've written lots of articles about making sure you don't do it.
Right.
So, you know, like any other, you know, thing, you shouldn't be doing stuff on the internet that isn't designed for the internet.
Yeah.
Well, this is saying this is where we bring SMB, where it is designed for the internet. You know, it is designed from jump to be safe to use there. And the goal is that you aren't just Windows. So, in fact, we have been working with partners and other companies to make sure that your client here could be Windows, could absolutely be Android, could be an iPhone, could be a Linux machine of some kind. And, you know, this is really more about expanding the protocol and less about like Windows, the client dominating a space. We want this to be, you know, the goal of Quick itself strategically is to start replacing TCP.
Right. I
mean, it's a roadmap to replacing TCP as a protocol. And we wanted to be in on that really early and do some good with that, you know, for people who need the functionality, but also just, I think TCP sort of like, you know, was designed for a different world. And now there's a possible replacement coming.
Well, and the VPN is a workaround. Like it's kind of a kludgy, you know, hey, we have this protocol. It wasn't really meant for this at this scale with this scope. So we're going to stick another thing on top of it.
Yeah. It's not, you know, it's trying to solve the problem the best way you can, which is, we can't change every protocol in the universe.
No.
And it will never be changed. So VPN became a sort of a, you know, they've been around for a long time, but I don't think anybody likes using VPNs. I mean, they can be sort of kludgy and they're
yeah.
not cheap. They can be somewhat unreliable and they require a lot of, you know, add-ons.
Yeah, well, just watching how Microsoft itself has twitched over their VPN solutions, right, with direct access
oh, yeah.
and so forth. It's just sort of a sign that you're looking for the best way. And if we follow along, yeah. it's fairly hard. I mean, I appreciate soft VPN solutions, especially through the pandemic, where I could just assign more VMs to my VPN requirements and keep going. I didn't have to try and order hardware from a company that didn't have any left. But fundamentally, this is a patch. Right. Well, I remember this was going to be solved by IPv6. Ha ha.
Right. I remember getting to Microsoft in 2004, and we had a customer, big customer, show up and say, like, we're trying to do some IPv6 stuff. And we're like, this is really gnarly. Yeah. Like, yeah, we have a goal to get there in like the next 2 years. And then, you know, I remember following up with somebody over there like 13 years later, and they're like, yeah, we just gave up.
Yeah. And again, the problem with building on all of these old things is that you end up having to do regressive support, which means you have security problems. The advantage of the quick approach is there's only a secure implementation. There is nothing else. If it works at all, it works securely.
Yeah, that's the beautiful, the really beautiful point about it you make. Getting to a mindset of not opting into security anymore. It's just part of it. A funny way that Microsoft was sort of ahead of that game for many years was RPC.
Yes.
If you built RPC features like DFSR, which you threw me under the bus at the beginning of the
I just, all I did was giggle a little, Ned. That's all I did. That's all. I didn't do anything else.
All those ancient ones from 2000, 2003 and stuff, Active Directory and all those ones, they all did encryption by default.
Yes.
And that was a good mindset to be in. And so many things that came after it inside Microsoft and outside Microsoft did not. Even though, the good ideas have been around there for a long time. It's not been a real even amount of enforcement. And I think the QUIC, which is IETF, you know, it's a consortium protocol. It's not owned by some particular company. It's not, there are lots of implementations of it and stuff, but generally speaking, the protocol is open and available to everybody. And it's that sort of idea of being secure by default that I hope just becomes the way everything is.
The real question is, will we finally start calling QUIC HTTP/3? Because they keep threatening that.
Well, that's the funny part is QUIC is tied up very deeply with HTTP/3.
Yeah.
It's tied up very deeply with new DNS stuff. Mm-hmm. It's now tied up very deeply with SMB, and it'll just be all over the place, everywhere. And it's got user mode and kernel mode implementations. Mm-hmm. It's very portable. Like the Edge browser uses QUIC already. But it's just baked in. It's very, you don't need your operating system to support it. It's
maybe it's just my bias that I look at the term QUIC the same way I looked at the term speedy, right? The SPDY protocol, which did literally just become HTTP/2, or at least was derived from that. Is the relationship different between QUIC and HTTP/3?
Yeah, I mean it is. In this case, I mean they're one is using the other.
Right.
QUIC itself is a UDP based. Protocol that sort of borrows good ideas from TCP around congestion and error handling that UDP never had, but also brings along UDPs like I don't take 75 bajillion steps in order to make a connection.
Yeah, well, and also just supporting out of order, right? Like that to me, the magic is you cannot get jammed up by that one squeaky packet. Right.
Yeah, it needs to, QUIC needed to have, TCP has tremendous positive capabilities.
Yeah.
You can pass the security part. It was designed to survive nuclear attack. Like that's its original intent.
That's what it's architected for.
Super duper duper, it's built for inherent reliability, and UDP was not. And this is where you sort of meet all the good parts of both, and you get a nice result. And, for me to be able to take like traverse firewalls, not come up with a crazy, my own port and stuff, and trying to get aboard a nice standard makes that really nice with QUIC.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that's all, something that you can touch and try if you go, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but we have released this Azure Edition. We started talking about Azure Edition in March. So we did 2019 Azure Edition. We talked about it at Ignite as part of a big sort of umbrella Azure service called the Auto Managed Service. And that umbrella is saying, stop thinking about Windows as a discrete thing by itself and start thinking about the problems you're trying to solve and what you're trying to accomplish with Windows. And, a big part of the pain of running Windows is patch management.
Yes.
And getting those best practices in place so that it's safe and optimized. Typically, especially around security, but also just around like how well it runs. So we started talking about Hot Patch and Azure Edition 2019 and AutoManage in March, and some small announcements and stuff. The beauty of Hot Patch was, and is, and will be forever, that you don't necessarily reboot every month.
Right.
That you can get some security updates and go 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months at a time, maybe without rebooting, depending on sort of like how things are going that year.
Hmm.
And then also have this best practice thing sitting around staring at you at your VMs, making sure that you, and so it's sort of desired state configuration, but really it's trying to keep an eye on, you know, scenarios you're running and things you're doing, and then take away the human effort. And the goal isn't to say like, oh, we're going to replace humans, because that is an endlessly farcical goal inside of the IT world. You know, there's millions and millions of Windows Server admins just in the United States, and there's millions and millions and millions and millions more outside the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to say, like, in your 80 hours of work that you're supposed to accomplish this week in 40 hours, can we take away some of those things so that your 80 number keeps shrinking down to the 40?
Right.
And you actually, you know, sometimes see your children or
but you're not even counting all the stuff in my to-do list that I was never going to get to anyway. All the higher value things I could have been doing for the organization. Like,
right.
I don't know a single IT person.
You're spending all this time on like tasks that come down to checklists, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, we got to patch all these servers. We have to organize their rebooting. We have to make sure that they got patched. We have to make sure that we tested the patches first. We have to make sure that we have security stuff in place that we are supposed to meet auditor requirements. And all those things are well known. We just didn't give you a great way to just have them happen.
Yeah.
Because you've got other stuff that cannot be automated. A large part of your job cannot be automated. And that's what you're getting really paid for as a human being, is to bring the parts where human beings need to do work. And it's just like the crazy, you know, It's ironic that, you know, you're doing all this work on computers that is really automation that you're doing by hand in order to make a machine which is designed to do automation work. Like, it's backwards. Yeah. You should be working on the stuff that the machine can't do and can't think. So the goal here is that we have this Azure Edition that lives inside of Azure. And then we have this Server 22 Azure Edition that starts adding more features. And SMB over quick is there. The hot patch feature is there. The Azure extended network feature is there. And that one we will get around to also running on premises. So
wow.
That one will eventually be able to be run on, say, Azure Stack HCI, for example. So as long as you've got the word Azure there somewhere, you can float this thing around. You can run them in Azure. You can run them on-prem. If you don't like Azure Public, fine. Don't go to Azure Public. Just run some Azure Stack clusters, right. You know, which are basically just Windows Server clusters that you're familiar with, that just have a nicer management story, to be honest. And run them there and get the exact on-prem experience you wanted with these newer and newer sets of features that keep flowing into this, you know, Azure Edition that are really hybrid-y kind of features for the most part, right?
For sure, yeah.
Things like Azure Extended Network is designed to help you migrate IP addresses to the cloud without having to change your apps. And obviously SMB over quick is a thing which, you know, it lives and breathes over hybrid computing and edge computing and internet computing. So that all makes perfect sense for this.
Well, and this ultimately benefits the Azure side of things too. If I do put my file stores in Azure, I'm moving fewer bits in and out of the data center in compression. That's just going to save everyone money.
Yeah, you get the combo there of quick and compression. You've got something really, really interesting.
Really interesting.
And then over time, Azure Files will also, Azure Files, the proper service in Azure, will start picking up these innovations as well. They tend to trail behind SMB, you know, doing the legwork, and then they add the capability there afterwards, especially right. When it makes sense. Something like SMB over quick makes perfect sense for Azure Files, right? I mean, like, that's a total no-brainer. Why sure. wouldn't you do that?
You're also speaking to this idea of what the future looks like, where it's harder and harder to tell when you're hybrid. Right. That where the server actually lives is less and less relevant. It just works.
Yeah. It especially if you start getting into that Well, I mean, there's so many things I want to talk about that I can't talk about yet. I have like this millions of things. I have all these white papers on my desk
and stuff right now. And I have the luxury of not knowing your secrets. Like, we only talk about what we're allowed to talk about. So I can speculate without being risky here. So, but I know when I've speculated well, because you get that giggle now, right?
It's like, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just like so much cool stuff going on with Windows and... people, you know, are always like, oh, is Windows dead? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, 100 million Windows servers that I don't even own. Yeah. And then there's millions of Windows servers that run Azure.
Yeah.
And there's millions of Windows servers in Azure. And I constantly get paid to make new features on Windows Server.
Yeah.
And like, we just put out a hiring rec, you know, to hire an Active Directory PM. They're like, oh, Active Directory's dead. I'm like, no, we just hired a guy to make AD features. Just stuff comes in ebbs and flows, right?
Sure.
You can't make everything all at once and still be, you know, profitable or even really attain anything when we just do a bunch of random small stuff. Sometimes we have to point the giant developer cannon at a few big problems, and then we point it again, and we point it again, and we point it again.
And it's just so many things to work on. But this is a heck of a roster here, Ned. Like, I think people are also wrestling with, do I need the latest version of server? But when we think about encryption, compression, more efficient sharing, like, what were you using a server for except these things? Of course you want those new bits.
Right. File server remains the most used Windows server workload, and it's not even close.
Yeah.
And they will have to drag me out of here.
Well, I'm grateful you're there, friend. At least I know that, you know, storage is under adult supervision, so to speak.
Don't ask my wife.
Oh yeah. Ned, always so much fun to talk to you. Thanks for coming back on the show. This is exciting stuff, and I'm glad to get that dive into these important bits.
I really appreciate the invite. It's always great to chat, and hopefully we can do it again, Rich.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.